This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to the 202nd episode of the Town Hall Academy. You know, bringing you the top experts, coaches, marketers, owners, and techs to create the premier content that you've known and loved for years is what we do, and we thank you for your support, and we strive to adapt and be on the forefront even more every day for you. Now, today's topic, you know, statistics and many studies conclude that a negative behavior creates liabilities in the business setting and it strains relationships. Now, on a personal level, it decreases productivity and performance. Now, not only does it damage teamwork, it also makes for unhappy customers. Who wants them? Now, our episode today attacks why a negative attitude has no room in our industry. Joining me are Craig O'Neill, Andy Polina, and Rick White. Grateful to Shop Marketing Pros and Shopware for sponsoring the Academy. You know, contactless service continues to be key in keeping your bays full while remaining 6 feet apart, and Shopware's completely digital workflow will wow your customers and keep your profits up. Tara from Topol Service Center commented recently, thank God for this amazing cloud-based software during this really difficult time. Now, she can't imagine life without it right now. So she says, thank you, Carolyn, and hashtag Team Shopware. Book a demo at getshopware.com. You know, when someone searches for a shop, who are they finding? Your competitors? Well, I hope not. It should be you. The good people over at Shop Marketing Pros know how to drive website traffic and make Google work for you. See them on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. You know, the key talking points from this episode are already done for you. It's on the show notes page at remarkableresults.biz/A202. Now, the notes will make for a great roundtable discussion for the team and even yourself. Have you seen the latest virtual shop tour? Well, get them all on aftermarketweekly.com. And the show was just released as a podcast, so you can hear my guest host and the virtual tour audibly via your favorite listening app or wherever you get your shows. Search for Aftermarket Weekly. It's the Town Hall Academy. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Carm?
It's Friday afternoon, right? TGIF. Why fix a negative attitude in your shop? Well, how about fixing a negative attitude that you may have? God almighty, I kind of recall times like that. Welcome to the Town Hall Academy from the Remarkable Results Radio podcast studios, the original single subject automotive aftermarket forum. We started this 202 weeks ago. I'm with Craig O'Neill, VP of Training at Autotext.me. Thanks, Craig, for being here.
Thanks for having me, Carm. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I think, as you all know, the topics come to me from the industry. And in this particular case, Craig, you brought it. And you actually brought Andy and Rick with you. Andy Polina, Legacy Auto Tech, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Andy.
Hi, how you doing, Carm?
Good man. And as I just found out, a very close neighbor to Craig O'Neill.
That's right. Just down that hall.
Yep. My good friend Rick White, Chief Coach, Cook, and Bottle Washer 180 Biz.
Hello, Carm. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday.
When I found out about this topic called attitudes, and, you know, we can call it why fix a negative attitude, why improve yours. I can't help in the years that I've been on this earth. And Andy, you brought some great talking points. And when I read your talking points, I found myself in a few of those.
Yeah, it's easy to go there, especially these days.
I want to ask you a really important question to set us off. We have attitudes on everything, don't we?
We do. There's so many different types of attitudes too, and so many. You can go downhill really fast, especially these days. And so you have to constantly be thinking about what you're telling yourself. Always. I mean, it takes practice. It doesn't happen overnight. You can't go to a motivational seminar and come out with a great attitude. It doesn't work like that.
I don't know about that. I can go to one of Rick White's seminars and I walk away, man, and I'm flying high for at least 10 minutes.
I'm speaking for me. I'm the downest Debbie there is at times, you know, so Rick, he's got his work cut out for him with me.
In fact, Andrew, you actually said to me, hey, look at, I was a Debbie Downer, I guess you were saying, and you'd love to share, you know, how you lifted yourself up and out. Would you do that a little later for us?
Of course.
Perfect. You know, as our audience grows, this is coming out as a podcast next week and we'll repurpose the video. So none of your great stuff, you know, that you're going to share with us will be lost on anyone. But, you know, Rick, I've heard you speak. I admire you so much. That attitudes, positive or negative, could be contagious, right?
Absolutely. You know, I became a student of attitude. I was married to my favorite wife, Brenda, for about 5 years. And at one point she came to me and she goes, I didn't sign up for this. Now, when your third wife says that, you tend to step back and say, okay, I better listen to whatever's coming next. And she said, you're turning into a grumpy old bastard, and we need to do something about it. So I started devouring books on attitude and realized, just like Andy said, that attitude left alone, your attitudes are going to go negative over time because of two reasons. Number one, our brains are hardwired to look for threats. So we're looking for bad things automatically. And the second thing is, society uses negativity to sell their stuff. So, hey, you're unhappy with this, you're too fat, you're too dumb, you're this, you're that, buy our product and you'll get everything you've ever wanted out of life. And if we leave it to just those two things, we are going to end up bitter, disappointed, disillusioned. But if we set up a routine every morning where we fill ourselves up, where we take care of ourselves, part of that has got to be an intentional feeding of our attitude. Attitude is a choice. That's a fact. Typically, we react. We have the ability to respond, but typically we react. And that is a problem. So being able to step back, recognize I can do this. Now, one of the things I do is I meditate. Craig, do you meditate?
Not as much as I should.
Yeah, I do, but my wife calls it sleeping. I don't know why. Andy, I know you. Yep. I know you meditate.
I do.
Right? Yep. I meditate about 10 minutes every morning. Mm-hmm. I read something positive. I listen to positive stuff. Absolutely. It's important to fill yourself up because we have a choice. The reality is our attitudes are contagious. There are people that you just love to be around because when you walk away from that, you feel better, you feel bigger, you feel more alive. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people that you are near, and in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you feel like your life is being sucked out of you, right? There's an old saying that says, everyone lights up a room. Some when they come in, some when they leave, right? Be the one that lights up a room when you walk in.
Yep.
That's really important.
Rick, help me with the discipline of meditation. I find, you know, I've heard you say this before. I don't do it. Maybe I should. How do I start?
First of all, everybody definitely should meditate. I've learned a lot about meditation. It's not about seeking silence and everything like that. I use an app called Waking Up. And I really like that app. I think it's $100 a year. And they give you just these guided meditations that you can listen to. And it really works well for me. There are some mornings I do really, really well. There are other mornings that I'm like just nonstop squirrel, right? Squirrel, 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 squirrel. And it's hard to quiet that down. And it's okay. It's just the act of slowing it down a little bit. I'm going to tell you that some of my clearest thinking happens right after.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it too, like Rick was saying, you don't need to reach some altered state and all that through it. I mean, you can pick, say, a quote or something and meditate on that for a bit. Think about it. Let it, you know what I mean? You don't have to completely clear your mind. And if your mind gets off track, you just gently pull yourself back. You don't go, I'm not doing this right. You know,
I suck. I shouldn't even do this.
Right. Yeah. Right.
There's some positivity for you.
Right.
I may not call it meditation, but I do find quiet time and I do find deep think going on. It may not be exactly the good think that I need to drive what I do, but I'm not unhappy with my life and you know, the results that I have. And I guess that means that for the most part, I probably have a pretty decent attitude. But we live with attitudes in our workplace, Craig. Is it possible to change, say, a team member, a peer, an employee's attitude, and if you find that you can't be the hero, is it best to move on?
Yeah, see, this is one of those things, and growing up in a family business, I face this regularly, not just with individuals that I work with, but within myself. I guarantee you, there are at least half a dozen people out there that if they were tuned in right now and had me talking about attitude when they knew me in my 20s, early 20s, to be like, what does this guy know about that, right?
Wait a minute, Craig. Are they ever going to let that go? Are they ever going to let you be who you are today? Because I recall hearing a speech. It was a she, and she went to a high school reunion 20 year. And someone came up to her and said, wow, you've changed. And she said, thank God.
Fortunately, most of the people that I worked with over a long time were with us for a long time, and we all kind of grew together, several different parts of the industry. Shoot, I just finished working with a shop this morning where it's a 8-9, almost 10 store group now, and one of the stores is managed by a guy that worked for our family business for 10 years when I was in middle school and high school. That man was one of my mentors for those years. I wept the day that he left, but knew me through some of the most challenging times in the family business, where we had issues in the shop, and there was like the front room and the back room, and there was attitude that would develop between those two parts of the shop. And like Rick was mentioning earlier, you feel insecure in those moments, and as soon as there's some insecurity, you've got to now prove yourself. And I quickly learned from some things, the wrong lessons at first, where like, well, I can prove myself by being super accurate and doing things better than anybody else in the shop. And that attitude sucks. It's just the wrong approach. And I've met so many people that take that approach, like Rick's talking about too, and Andy's experience now too. You haven't really studied attitude. None of us go into a shop environment thinking we're going to study psychology and behavioral psychology or relational items as well. We just are all of a sudden human beings trying to find ourselves the way and prove our way as we go.
Hey, Carm here. Now coming up, learn about the power of the mirror. Hey, you know, auto repair is a high-dollar, high-value transaction, and your customer sensitivity about how much it costs and why is never more important than when you ask them to pay the bill. While these conversations can sometimes feel awkward or uncomfortable, it's important that you don't fall down and cheapen your services at the final step. Shopware's shop management platform now offers a solution that helps you showcase the value and sophistication that you've invested throughout the repair. With our innovative digital workflow, customers can review, approve, and even pay for services right from their smartphone. Let remote pay work for you and improve your customer experience. Get started today. Visit GetShopware.com for more information and to request a demo. Hey, Carm here. Are your competitors ranking higher than you in search? Is your marketing company using plain vanilla recycled content? And does your marketing look like every other shop's and you're not even sure it's working? Powerful, effective marketing is not cookie cutter. It should showcase all of the things that are unique about your business. Don't you think you deserve better results? It's time to make a change. Our good friends at Shop Marketing Pros are past shop owners and industry veterans. They get it. Their process is pretty simple. Listen, create, and do. They spend time getting to know you and create a unique marketing message and then do the heavy lifting for you so you can do what you do best. Run a shop and fix cars. Do yourself a favor. Give your shop the top-notch marketing it deserves. Schedule a call today on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. That's shopmarketingpros.com. Don't wait. Do it now. I hung on to people because they were so good at what they did. And I said, the business is better off didn't realize that there was a cancer around us and we all were toxic. And I guess it takes a couple of moves like that to realize that you have to make moves quicker than you sometimes expect.
Oh, for sure. You know, I held on to one guy way, way too long. I mean, way too long. And like everybody told me, oh, well, you'd be surprised when you get rid of him, you might feel better. And I'm like, no, that's impossible. It's going to be so hard to find somebody. And I was actually not just bothered by the person's attitude, but by the thought of having to replace them. And, oh, that's going to be too much. And just awfulizing and just, you know, just the dread I put on myself. And really, you have to rip the Band-Aid off and go. I'm not saying that you can just be impulsive.
I remember riding my bike up to your shop and hearing that you had let an individual go. And it shocked me that I was like, oh my, you did? Really? Wow. How's it going? It's like, dude, it's going good. It's like, really? Good to hear.
I mean, you fear having to wear another hat, you know, being as small as I am too. I mean, we're a 3-bay shop. So whenever any person goes, I got to fill that position too. So it's, but I'm realizing that actually is good for me too, because when I get out there in the shop or whatever, I start noticing things that aren't efficient, things like that, and I can make changes. So doing every hat once in a while is a good idea to me.
And you have a good hat for it too. And you might not realize this, but that hat, I see the symbol on it. It's a buffalo, right? Now, this is cool because Chris, my boss, said, or text me, he had a phrase that you be like the buffalo. And I'd never heard that before, but that phrase, some of you might be familiar with it, where buffalo do this amazing thing where when you're going through a hard time, the buffalo will run through a storm to get through that storm quicker. Yep. And I thought that's a great phrase. That's a positive attitude.
I thought you were paying homage to the fact that I live in Buffalo.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. That's what it was. That's right. But, no, Craig's right. I mean, there's a book I just read. I've been really getting into stoicism lately. And a lot of people, an extreme simplification is like...
And you've always been stoic.
Yeah, right. Well, some people think that you just remain emotionless and you know, but that's not the case. It really is just... there's a book by Ryan Holiday I recommend called The Obstacle is the Way. And it's amazing. I don't even like those kind of books. It's kind of short-lived for me when I read those things, but this one actually holds some weight to me. Like it definitely hit home.
So, Rick, so much of what a good attitude is embellished and it's surrounded by the culture of the business.
Yeah, you know, the owner can decide on the environment that they want to have in their business. And one of the things that I work my clients through all the time is what I call rules of engagement. We define the values that we're going to engage when we interact with each other. And then you hold each other accountable to those rules of engagement. It's really, really important because it takes so little to have somebody feel like they weren't listened to, aren't appreciated, aren't valued, weren't, you know what I mean? So by being able to dictate what that is, and I got to tell you, this is going to hurt some people, and I want to apologize in advance, and that probably just gets Carm all nervous. But I'm going to tell you that if you have an attitude problem in your shop, I want you to look in the mirror, because usually when you have an attitude problem in the shop, it's a reflection of what you, the owner or leader, what you're bringing to the shop. Okay. If I have one shop owner say, man, I can't get my people to show up on time. And I said, well, what time do you come in? He goes, 9:30, quarter of 10. That's like, I can fix this for you. So, you know, the attitude, you can decide on what is acceptable and what isn't. You should have a standard for that. That is part of the environment or culture that you need to create in order to attract and keep top talent. That is going to be the differentiator right now, is that environment, because you're not always going to be able to pay more. But if you can make people feel better doing what they love to do, they're going to want to be there. The other thing that's really important, okay, if Andy is a tech and I know I kind of have a baseline for what Andy's mood and, you know, reactions and stuff are, if I see Andy off a little bit, right? He's having a bad day. That's what we say. He's having a bad day. And then we start to make stories up. Oh, he must have had a fight with his wife, or he's having a problem with one of the kids. And you let it go. Worst thing you can ever do. What you want to do is come up to Andy and say, Andy, man, it really seems like you're having a tough day today. Is there anything you want to talk about? Is there something I can do to help? Because what you do in that moment is, number one, you show them that you care. You show them that you saw it. You're showing them that it's not okay, but you're there to help.
Well, first you break down the walls with empathy, and then you're able to communicate with them.
Yes.
Well, you're talking about different components of attitude and this sort of thing. As I've learned to understand attitude, there are three basic components. You have the affective, behavioral, and cognitive. Affective is how something is making somebody feel. Mm-hmm. And that's not where we start the conversation so many times. We just look at how they're acting and we say, well, you're angry. and we start dealing with the anger feeling. And we haven't even talked about why they feel that way at all, or how we might be able to help that, or point out that this behavior, it's not okay. We do need the accountability there. But now let's cognitively look at it. How should we be thinking about this and move forward from that point?
Well, what tends to happen, Craig, is it's complementary and non-complementary behavior. And I know this is a psychology course a little bit, guys, and I'm sorry, gals. So when, let's say, Craig, I come up to you and you're angry, I perceive you to be angry. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you did something to me, right? Mm-hmm. I tend to push back.
Right.
Right? I'm coming back and going, hey, that's not okay. You can't do that here. In other words, I'm reacting to your actions instead of coming to you curious and going, Craig, this is really unlike him, man. What's going on?
Exactly.
Right. And starting to dig in a little bit, because we got to understand that there are incidences where we have feelings to deal with, and those are different from attitudes. Attitude is an ongoing kind of baseline behavior. Right. I heard Richard Flint say this one time and I absolutely love it. He says you have three ways to get up out of bed every day. You can hop out of bed, roll out of bed, or fall out of bed. Which are you doing? And I thought that is so cool. Right. I make a choice to hop out of bed every day. I make a choice. It has to be a choice, because if I let situation, circumstances, events, and other people dictate it, I'm going to stay in bed.
It's a self-defeating thing when you let your attitude take control over the thing. And I realized this too late especially in the mid-20s, my mid-20s. The fact of the matter is that I wasn't being as effective in communicating my frustrations or other things that were going on, because I was essentially forcing people to encounter my anger. They were reacting then not to my ideas or the fact that I wasn't feeling like I was being listened to, or that I was trying to accomplish something else. They were just trying to react to a very frustrated individual. And I think this happens so frequently. I deal with owners that are still in the middle of this, unaware of this element of themselves, that it's not just a grumpy technician that's preventing a change from happening in the shop. That grumpy technician is a mirror of other attitudes that this owner is bringing into the equation.
Absolutely. I'm stressed out about something and I end up stressing everybody else out. They react to it. I react to their reaction, and we're going nuclear before you know it.
Really. I mean, you have to give people grace. You have to, if somebody's having a bad day or whatever, talk to them, actively listen to them. When you listen to them and then you respond to them, oh, that must suck. That must, it brings down those walls. And then you can start saying, well, I'll tell you what, this is what I suggest we do today. How about you just do this? I've even said, hey, man, why don't you just take the day off? I'll pay you. Just go home, sort some things out. But if it continues like that, if they're not willing to swallow the pill of humility and say, maybe it's something I'm doing, maybe it's the way I'm reacting to things, or, they have to own it. And it's hard to make people see that. But once I did, it changed everything. And it's a work in progress.
Well, some humility involved in this sort of thing. Once you've realized some of our own, everyone goes through phases like this in their life where you've had bad attitudes and you needed help getting out of that funk. Recognizing that you've been there, like, I'm glad I spent a few years being angry and unbearable. I can appreciate upset people as a result. Like, this person's angry and they're probably really great people.
Do you try to help them up and over?
Yeah, you have to. And you can't give up on people that are feeling something.
But they have to want to change.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what I was saying. I mean, if they're constantly pointing the finger all the time, then there's not much hope for them.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they have to want to be helped a lot of times we're not aware of our own attitudes. We have blind spots. I think I'm having a great day. My wife comes over to me and she goes, what's crawled up your butt today? Right. And I'm not even aware of it. And a lot of us as guys, and I'm speaking guys, and I don't mean this in any, you know, gender, you know, way, but we've been taught as a rule to ignore our emotions, to ignore, you know, to bury them and everything like that. And they don't stay buried. They come out. Right.
Every time. Yeah.
They come out. And, you know, I think the first step, number one, is awareness. If I came up to Andy and go, Andy, man, look, it really seems like you're pointing fingers at everybody right now. Can we step back and look at this a little bit? Mm-hmm. Now, one of the important things, and I want you to understand, when we have a problem in the shop, we tend to do one of two things. We tend to either react to it and it escalates, mm-hmm. or we come in and we try to approach it from a logical perspective and, you know, try to talk to them about, hey, do this, do that, do this, do that. It doesn't work. We have to connect. We got to recognize we're dealing with an emotional being right now. They are an emotional state of mind. They're not creative. They're not thinking. They're not logical. They're in an emotional state. We have to connect with that emotional state first. And the way we do that is by being curious, by asking questions, so that you don't say, hey, Andy, you're being an ass, right? Because what's he going to do?
You know, he's going to push back. I think you have said that to me, but
I'm not sure I have. And
I'm kidding.
Hey, let's break the code here. Rick is Andy's coach, and Andy could fire him anytime.
Right.
But it's really important that when we have somebody in that mood, we have to meet them where they're at. We have to say, Andy, man, it really looks like you're having a tough day. What's going on, man? Do you need some help? Do you want somebody to talk to? You know, and trust me, they're going to open up. They're going to talk to you if they even have a modicum of thinking that you're going to listen.
But Rick, you can't be the problem as the owner. If he's mimicking you because you show up late and you've got a bad attitude, how could you fix his if you can't fix yours?
Because maybe what Andy comes back and says is, Rick, you've been on me all week. I can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I've got to be humble and open enough to listen and let that perspective in. It doesn't mean that it's right. It means that it's his and it's real. And I have to respect that. So I might say, can you give me an example of what you're talking about? How did you talk about that? You know, there's this big thing in two different areas. It's like a God wink where I've seen people talking about, are you telling people what not to do or are you asking them what to do? Mm-hmm. Stop doing that. Please do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right?
It's true with kids, true with employees.
It doesn't make a difference. It's true with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been starting to monitor how I'm doing it and I'm really pretty amazed at what I need to fix. Right. So if Andy comes back to me and says, hey, you're just been riding my ass all weekend. I'm sick of it and I can't take it anymore. Can you, Andy? All right. I'm hearing you. Let's talk about this. I want to help. I want to make it right. Can you please give me some examples? And I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to defend. I'm going to listen. Okay. And then I'm going to ask another question. Andy, what can I do to be better? Mm-hmm. How could I have handled that better? And I'm going to listen. And guess what's going to happen to Andy's attitude? Even if I'm the problem, guess what happens to his attitude? Because he was listened, heard, valued, and appreciated.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even when someone has a good attitude, I try to go to each team member and once in a while just say, what's going on? Is it, you know, how's everything going? Is everything okay here? Or is everything okay with me? I mean, you have to be proactive in that too. And say, and I remind him, listen, if I don't know about it, I can't fix it. You know, I can't do anything about it. So please communicate all the time. My door is always open.
I love where this thing is going. Thank you all so much. A couple of things I would love to think about covering: Craig family businesses. We have so many out there, and I know I came from a family business, Craig, you did too. And of course, Andy, I'd love you to, you know, tell us about how your transformation happened. So Craig, family business issues.
Family businesses are a fascinating place because every time you have a disagreement, it's passionate. Everybody in there wants to see the place succeed. Everybody in there wants really the same things, but they want to have the influence. They want to have, there's ego, there's siblings, there's everything else. My brother and I, last several years that we did work together, fantastic. And there's some of the most rewarding years of my career in the shop. The years before that, not always the case. We did not see eye to eye. My dad, a fantastic individual, but a very quiet man. My grandpa, the founder, very dynamic, bombastic, and ego-driven man, brilliant and genius in so many ways of business, but a very difficult person to be around. And the dynamics made it extraordinarily challenging, extraordinarily stressful. Finding your identity in the midst of all that, I think it's a really horrible way to find out what you're actually capable of. My greater successes personally that I take a lot of pride in moving out of the shop, actually, and starting to see how I work with other teams that aren't family, tremendously more rewarding. I lament that. I feel like now that I've done that and been in other parts of the industry, I could go back the other way and I would have been so much more effective at
But Craig, how much of that is youth versus maturity?
I think a lot of it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's because you're growing up together too. Everybody's evolving.
It's not even that. I mean, when I was 20 years old, I knew everything.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I had to be right.
Yes.
Right? If you didn't pick my choice, it sucked. Right?
Yeah. It's horrible.
So today it's all about what's the best thing for the company. So there's a different focus. It's more of an outcome focus than being right. I'm trading being right for doing right. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm paying for this now. I've got a son who's 15. He knows everything already too. And it's amazing. I'm like, oh, I must have been like this. Oh, wow.
I remember saying to my wife, I wasn't like that, was I?
God has a way of giving us back what we brought.
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
You know? They're called kids.
Listen, there's been an awful lot of great comments. Bill Hill, I medicate with scotch and cigars. Okay, that's a great choice. I love that. That's a great way to fix an attitude. Thank you so much, Bill. I love this comment from Paul. He said he was thankful to have found so many of the authors that we talk about here on the show. And so I thank you, Paul, for that. And I think one of the things that we were talking about, and Craig, for you, when we are in our early days and still in that mature curve, no matter what responsibilities we got in the family business, Dad said, oh, my God, wait a minute. He's from my loins. This guy's got to know everything I do. He's got to be a great leader.
No. Dads don't look. I grew up in a family business. Dads, when they think about giving you responsibility, think about you stuffing peas up your nose as a kid. And they think, what the hell am I thinking?
My dad, I really appreciate it for is that he gave us a lot of early opportunities to take responsibility and run with it. The thing with that is it didn't always come with a lot of guidance, and it came with a lot of extra slack to go ahead and make mistakes, which is a gift. The frustrating element of that is when you have the other founder that is not cool with this. Mm-hmm. And he's also a relative. And there's a tremendous amount of insecurity that can come from your own family at that point when they're saying, no, you can't do it that way, or you're not appreciated in this, or this is the way. And sometimes family dynamics, I know they're not all beautiful, and I would love to talk about mine as though it was perfect all the time. It was not perfect all the time. And guys, it's okay to admit that. I still love them. We still see each other for the holidays. It's all right. But Grandpa made some things very difficult by actually coming into the business and saying, you don't have to listen to this guy on this. Mm-hmm. You come to me if there's any problems with this individual. I'm like, what a horrible thing to introduce. The attitudes that developed from that, horrible to try to go through. I came home the most unhappy person for years under that climate. My wife had to see that. It was hard.
There needs to be matriarch training when you're 60.
Right, right. And folks, I know there's people out there dealing with dynamics like that in a family business. And first off, I say this very cautiously. I moved on from my family business, not just for those reasons, but when I did, I was amazed at how much stress was taken off of my shoulders of trying to make that sort of dynamic work out. And there is other alternatives for you. I felt like there was nothing else out there in the world for me other than that. I had to make that very challenging dynamic work. It's okay to explore other things. Chances are you are more qualified than you possibly imagine. And if you're not getting that affirmation from people who you do truly love and want to be around, sometimes moving on, best thing you could do, not just for yourself, but maybe the team that you're going to join that's going to benefit from your expertise and your experiences.
But here's the thing. I believe that you can learn in a family, again, a family and dynamic, mm-hmm. if you step back and say, okay, how can I be a better communicator? How can I, right? Because there's this really great, great book called The Clarity Factor, and it's by Ray DeZazzo. And you can only get it on Amazon. It's a paperback. It's a real easy read. It talks about the four secrets to communicating clearly. One of the things he talks about is distortion fields. Each one of us has a distortion field. Like, let's say Andy's got a bad attitude, right? And I, as the owner, please, and everybody that's listening to this and ever listens to this, before you go and confront somebody, ask yourself, what are you bringing? What baggage are you bringing to the dynamic before you ever open your mouth? If you're having a bad day, is that going to affect it? Yes. If you have a problem with this guy right now, is that going to affect it? Yes. You got to stop thinking about these things and reacting and start thinking about what the outcome is that you want. You know, you have a technician blow up an engine, but he's a great tech. Yeah. Do you go out there and, you know, blow up literally and just, you know, go up one side and down the other about how stupid he was and what a dumb thing to do? You know, but if you realize he's a good tech, I want to engage him. I want to pull him in closer. I want him to feel more valued. It changes that outcome. That thinking of that outcome changes the engagement. So now I want to use it as a teaching moment. But I know, listen, Andy, I know this was a mistake. You're a great tech. You are a great tech. I'm so glad you're a part of this team. I know you feel bad about this, but listen, let's step back. Let's look at this together and let's figure out how this never happens again. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's use this as a teaching moment. I need your help. Can you do that with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Changes the entire dynamic. But I think it gives us an opportunity. I think between working with my father at growing up, and now my wife and I have been working together for 13 years, I'm becoming a better communicator because of it.
Mm-hmm. I learned the hard way. The external, you can't really control it. Most of the time, you can only control the internal. I mean, I know that's cliche, but much of bad attitude just comes from distorted thinking. A lot of things, the shoulds, must, this employee must do this. They should do this. Why aren't they doing this? And you have these demands and expectations. And when they don't get met, you either fly off the handle, you get down, your attitude goes down, when really you've got to manage those thought distortions, the awfulization, the discounting all the positive things that happen. You're like, oh, this always happens. This, you know, this is
generalizations.
Overgeneralizations. It was a really hard lesson learned that the reason really I have a shop right now is because I couldn't work for someone else because I was miserable. And I was making myself miserable. And I kept thinking, well, if I do this, I'll be happy. If I do this, I'll be happy. If I do this, I'll be happy. And now I have a shop and all of a sudden I kind of hit rock bottom. Very quickly after buying my partner out, because that was another thing. Get rid of my partner, I'll be happy. It finally came down to, man, I'm miserable. And I'm looking around like, I guess I'm the only one left to get rid of. Like, you know what I mean? It's
to Rick's story, look in the mirror, right?
Yeah. And it's just, it was, I'm so fortunate at 40 years old. I'm 44 now, but at 40 years old was around the time that I realized you can't just run all the time. You can't, changing the external isn't going to make you happier.
No.
Wherever you go, there you are. It's the old saying. So having to swallow that pill and realize, man, and there's no hack, there's no shortcut, it's practice every day. When you wake up in the morning, you have to protect your consciousness from the minute you wake up. Watch the people you hang out with. God forbid you look at your phone first thing when you wake up. Stay away from that. Drink a cup of coffee. Think about what you'd like to do today, not what you must do today. You know what I mean? Get rid of all that stuff. Be kind to yourself a little bit, but also realize that only you can change your life. I mean, that's it. Nobody's got a magic pill for you.
Coming from someone who's resurrected himself. Thank you, Andy. Hey, a couple of very interesting things. Great to have Ray Fisher, Executive Director, ASA National. Craig's not exaggerating. Great family, great visions, but not without challenges. Thanks for the great group.
Ray, Grand Rapids, I feel very fortunate to have enjoyed his mentorship over several years as well.
I've had so much good input from Ray over the years since I've known him.
Glad that Ray is here. Let me see, there was another comment. Oh, somebody that both Rick and I know it was Kent says, try growing up with Cecil as a father. Ha ha. The pressure to do well can be unbearable sometimes.
That's worth discussing because that is a lot of where that pressure in a family dynamic comes from is I have this perfection complex that I had to do. And I got very, very good at procedures as a result. I'm thankful for it, I think, but that never goes away. And that level of perfection for someone with my personality, it just keeps on carrying forward. And you want to see it in other people. And the hardest thing as a manager is to watch them do a procedure that you've perfected a different way.
Micromanaging will tear yourself down and everyone else.
It's a trap.
Perfection will keep you from starting too. I mean,
yes.
Every time.
What do I say? Perfection is an illusion created by the devil to rob men and women of their dreams.
That's right. Mm.
That is what perfection is. You want your best. That's all. Yeah. Your best today and realize tomorrow your best is going to be better. That's what you want to be having.
This was an incredible discussion, team. I want to thank you for this. We covered a lot of the things you brought. And one of the things that I really wanted to cover, Rick, that was on your list was how to fix it. Now, I know you covered a lot of that stuff, but if in your final words, you can do a little bit of how stuff for us. And then I'll start with Rick. We'll do Andy. And then Craig will let you summarize it. Rick?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, before we fix any attitude problems in the shop, we got to make sure our attitude is right first. Now, I'm going to give you a little secret. Every day, you're not aware of it, and Andy and I have talked about this at length. Every day, you're asking yourself questions inside. That little voice inside all day long is asking you questions. The problem we have is it's asking us terrible questions. So you might be waking up. Think about this for a second. You're a shop owner. And you wake up and the first question that you ask yourself is what's going to go wrong today? What do you think your attitude's going to be like? What do you think your day is going to be like? What you've got to do if you want a better life, you've got to learn to ask yourself better questions. How can I find more joy in my day today? How can I help someone else today? How can I be there for others today? How can I make sure that I'm seeing all the opportunities that are around me today? When you start asking yourself better questions, questions create focus. Focus creates meaning. Meaning creates actions. Actions create results. So start by asking yourself better questions. If you're in a lousy mood, just say, what am I asking myself? What am I focused on? How can I turn this around? Right? You can look at something that's really bad and think, man, this is just terrible. This is terrible. This is terrible. Oh, poor me. Or you can start to look around figuratively from different perspectives and find one that empowers you. Because the reality is every day your life is filled with possibility, opportunities, and joy. It's also filled with problems and challenges. You get a choice. You get a choice as to what you're staring at. Okay? I guarantee you they're both there every single day. Which do you want to see more of? Now, doesn't mean if you're going to stare at the possibilities, opportunities, enjoying your life, that's fantastic. It doesn't mean that the problems go away. What you have to do is believe that you're capable of overcoming those problems.
Love that. Great summary. Thank you so much, Rick. Andy, we'll let you go next.
You can change your attitude. Like I said, I'm still a work in progress, but it is the most important if you want to set an example for everyone else.
Andy, do you find this to be the hardest thing that you do every day?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it was nothing easy for me. I mean, I was borderline debilitated with burnout, depression, anxiety, to the point where I was almost non-functional. Thankfully, I had no choice but to keep going at work. What I try to do now is just, first of all, don't compare yourself, your business, yourself, or anything to anyone else other than just who you were yesterday. Like, just a little bit better. You don't have to fix yourself overnight. Just one little thing, and eventually you'll get momentum. But what I do also too, when I'm feeling bad, angry, anxious, depressed, whatever, you have to look for the sentences in your head. What am I telling myself? This must be like that. Like I said, and how does it make me feel? Like, what thought distortion am I using, and how is that making me feel? And then how can you reframe it? That's what it boils down to. And it takes practice all the time, and you'll fall back, you know, now and then, but nothing in this world can make you miserable. You can have bad things happen, but only you can make yourself miserable over them and awfulize them. You can't control the external, like I said, and it really just boils down to stop playing the bad tape in your head. Stop playing it. If you're repeating the same garbage over and over again, it's just going to get subconscious. And a bad attitude, I'm an example of a bad attitude, can lead to something serious if you don't get control of it. It can destroy your life.
Yeah, but he's come a long way. Mm-hmm. Andy and I have been working together now for 2 years, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he has come so far in this journey, and I am so incredibly proud of the growth and the peace that Andy is coming to, you know, experience. That anybody that's in a bad place or feels like there's no way out, there's always a way.
Always.
Find someone to talk to. Find someone that'll listen. Don't find another negative person that you get a pity party going. Find somebody that's going to pull you up.
And if you're like Rick said, don't sit there and have pity over yourself, because you're just playing that tape again. You're just sinking it in deeper and deeper.
That was my question, though, Andy. What did you do to stop playing the tape? I mean, was Rick a help, or did you get some help outside, or did you go to a positive person and says, how do you do this?
I thankfully had a very good support system. My wife, Nikki, my children, my dad, Rick, my friend, Rob. I mean, so many good people around me. Ray Fisher, everyone. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Craig, so many people. It was a journey, and a lot of it, I was trying medications, all this other stuff. And really, my doctor, Dr. Mooney, psychologist, does cognitive behavioral therapy. And honestly, that is the most effective thing, because it really comes down to changing your thinking. That's it. And it's not an overnight, like, okay, I changed my thinking, I should feel better right now. No, that's not how it works. It takes practice.
A little bit.
Just practice, practice, practice. Unfortunately, a lot of things on the internet and everything is like, happiness is a choice. Well, you can't just flip a switch like that, and you'll actually make yourself feel worse.
Yes.
Expecting to feel better. And that is a bad, bad snowball. I mean, you can't change overnight. It's a journey. You just don't quit. Fortunately, I had people to help right away, but a lot of people don't, but there is always somebody out there there's so many resources for help. And in this industry and business ownership in general, not many people talk about mental illness, I guess you could call it. And I think it's important that there is more talk about it, because business can drive you down really quickly. It's a stressful thing. And if you don't learn how to control it, it'll tear you up.
Thank you so much for being here and your transparency and your honesty. I'll bet you there's going to be thousands of people that can relate to your story, and hopefully will use it for themselves to pick themselves up.
Even on Facebook, some of the groups, when I was on Facebook, I just put a post out there in a shop owners group, and like, man, I'm really having a hard time. Is anybody else having a hard time? And I couldn't believe how many people just reached out. It's amazing.
It's amazing how we try to put a smile on, but like I tell people, you can't put lipstick on a pig and call it pretty. That's the first thing. If you really want to grow your self-confidence and self-esteem, be honest with yourself. And the second thing is keep your word to yourself. When you say you're going to do something, you do it. And you're going to start feeling better. And it's so important. Don't put a false smile on. Be real. But then go look for help. Talk to somebody.
I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me, honestly, to finally hit bottom. I want to put it out there, too. If anyone, any other shop owners or business owners have any troubles and want to hear my story, please reach out. I'll be happy to help and try to get you on the right track.
If there's anybody that's really feeling lost and needs to just have someone listen, you can reach out to me as well. No, I just want to help. No charge. No, we'll help.
Me too.
Rick at 180 Biz. Hey, Craig, I'll let you sum this up, man.
I've known parts of Andy's story for so long, and I know that's going to connect with many other people, because I've met many other people like that. And he mentioned something else I think is super important, and it's the T word, therapy, right? This is not something anyone wants to admit doing or having. There's a stigma against it, but I'll tell you from personal experience in the last few years with myself, everybody should talk at some point in their life to a therapist, whether it be behavioral, relational, or other, and learn to put a language to what you're feeling. Because if you don't, and Rick's mentioned it, and Andy's mentioned this too, those feelings that you have, they have to be focused on, they have to be understood, and they have to be expressed. And it needs to be with someone that isn't giving you something else to react to. Your spouse, your employees, your partners. You have to have this unbiased person in your life to put some context in that, and you will move forward from that point a healthier, more rounded person than before. It is the one thing that I would want anyone to walk away from is look up someone, find a recommendation. I'm sure you have someone else who knows something. They probably can give you a name of a person.
Well, make sure they're telling you something that you don't want to hear a lot of times. I mean, not just what you want to hear. You have to do the work yourself. There's no hack.
We're all analysts of our own feelings at various times. And we all become very good at analyzing those feelings or why we're thinking that way. But we aren't actually just admitting what you're feeling. And it's like, oh, okay. So you understand why you're upset. But tell me how you feel. Like what's behind that feeling? Like how are you feeling with this thing that's happening to you? And it's like, oh, well, it's really frustrating. Right. And that's like, okay, is that anger? Is it sadness? Is it fear? Is it, what is, you keep going into that. And we always want to just go into the things and manage the things rather than just really grasp that feeling. And it's very complicated. That's why there's specialists for that thing, which none of us are, but we're all, I think, like students of this topic just from being practitioners of attitude, which everybody in the world is at every moment.
Wow, what a interesting, deep, and heavy discussion. Something that, Craig, I guess we really needed. The chatter on social media was off the charts for this one. Why fix a negative attitude in your shop or in you? Thanks to Craig O'Neill, VP Training, Autotext.me, Rick White, Chief Cook Bottle Washer, Coach at 180 Biz, and Andy Polina, Legacy Auto Tech in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Wow, thank you. And it's maybe a little too early, but the best of the holidays to you all. Thanks.
Yeah, you too, Carm. Everyone as well.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, I'm so honored to be on, Carm. Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.